Okay, so we're starting really our first learning of Alvei Psachim, the 10th chapter in Psachim, and being that we're starting for some of us after a while not learning, or not officially sitting down learning Gemara, so let's remind ourselves of a few basic concepts. It's always good as an introduction to learning Masechet, to learn the Mishnayot of that Masechet. Many Mishnayot, Tosfos tells us in the beginning of Shabbos, and something that you'd notice on your own, the many Mishnayot take a certain chronological order. So Psachim is like that too. The Mishnayot begin by discussing how you prepare for Pesach, how you check for Pesach, how you clean for Pesach, and then the laws of the Korban Pesach, and then the laws of what happens if a Korban Pesach is brought, and everyone's Tameh, and all the details of the Korban. And then we have the laws of the Matzah and the laws of the Maror. And then we had Erev Psachim, the preparations that lead us into the Seder. And really, this chapter is the end of the Masechet, and it is the chapter which is most focused on the practical halachot of Pesach. It goes into the laws of the Leila Seder. It goes into what you say in the Haggadah. So the chapter really is very encompassing as far as the laws of the Seder. In passing, the first about 7 to 10 daf focus on all kinds of other points that are mentioned in passing that are very relevant. Laws of Kiddush, as we will see, and many other laws, the laws of the four cups, which affect the laws of other cups of blessings, and the other, could you marry a couple off over a cup of beer? You know, but we'll get to that. What about a cup of milk? So all that we will see. What about a cup of soda? So we'll learn Rav Moshe's tshuva on that, Bezrat Hashem. There's a long discussion. What do you do when there is no wine to be had? You know, wine used to be a very expensive commodity, especially when you have to worry about Yain Nesech, so then transportation of wine becomes very complicated in Europe. So most people didn't have wine. You know, the Mishnah Brewer tells you how you make wine out of raisins. So we'll learn those halachot Bezrat Hashem too. If you guys want a feel for what we're doing, it's a very good idea to learn the Mishnayot. Now, there's one challenge when you learn Mishnah and Gemara, and that is that the Mishnah and Gemara were not written in an order that's logical to us. We have to remember that Mishnayos were learned by everyone. Dame Aretz knew Mishnayos backwards and forwards. Up until about 30 years ago, you had Yemenites who would sit on Shabbos afternoon smoking, Mechal Shabbos, not wearing a yarmulke, and chanting Mishnayos. Wow. Because in Yemen, they were accustomed, the way the Amoratsim were accustomed in the time of the Gemara, that everyone knew the Mishnayos. So to us, you open a Masechet Shabbos, and you don't get to the Lamed Tes Melachos till you hit the 7th chapter, and you ask yourself, what's going on here? How come Rebbe didn't begin the Mishnayos with the 39 Melachos? Isn't that the most basic thing? Shouldn't you start with that? So the Gemara has a certain answer, and Tosfos has a twist on that answer. And Tosfos says, that's where Tosfos says, the Gemara is going in chronological order, from Friday going into Shabbos, etc. But at the end of the day, part of the answer is that they never learned like we learn, you know, break your teeth over one line of Mishnah. By the time a kid was 10, he knew all of Shas by heart, and it stayed with him, you know, by the time he was 15, not 10. At 10, they started Mishnah. And it stayed with them. The way the Yemenites, 20, 30 years ago, they would all sit around chanting Mishnah Shabbos afternoon. It was like their thing to do, you know. What do you do on a Shabbos afternoon? You turn on the radio and you listen to nice Hasidic music. You smoke your cigarette. And as you're having a chinga with everyone together, you chant Mishnayos, right? So we don't have these concepts. So to us, the Mishnayos are foreign, and the Mishnayos are not in an order that's easy for us to understand. So we have something that's easier. It's the Rambam. The Rambam came and wrote a work where he writes. His goal is that the work is in a language that everyone understands. It's in Hebrew. And it's in an order that's logical and it's easy to find things. So if we wanted to prepare for a subject matter we were learning, the best tool to prepare is the Rambam. The Mishnayos are very, very good if you could do that. But if you want to prepare, the next best thing is the Rambam. Just don't get confused. Remember that the Rambam is not 100% halacha. If there's one book that the Shulchan Aruch went with in halacha more than any other book, it's the Rambam. I'd say in about 70% of the places, the halacha is like the Rambam. So someone who knows Rambam well has a handle, but he won't know when he's in that 30% range that the halacha is not like the Rambam. That's why it's a little dangerous to learn Rambam. But we're not learning halacha. It's a preparation for our learning. And as a preparation for our learning, learning Rambam is a very good tool. If I were here, Ben Azmanim, I'd invite you guys to come, and we'd have some preparatory learning for our learning, and we would do Rambam. Those of you who want, get together, set up your own chavrusas, or learn it on your own. And it's also a good thing to get used to skimming. So you don't understand every line. Skim it. Take it with you on the road. Take it with you when you're on a bus. And start skimming the Rambam. You'll get a picture. You'll have certain things you don't understand, okay? But you'll still have a good introduction. Okay, so now, without further ado, let's begin. Our chapter is called Arvei Pesachim. And Tosfos automatically points out that it's unclear here whether the Mishnah should say Erev Pesachim, the way it's written by us, or Arvei Pesachim. We'll read it as it says. Now, one of the challenges and benefits of Arvei Pesachim is that you have Rashi's commentary and his grandson, the Rashbam's commentary. And the Rashbam goes hand in hand with Rashi, but expands a little bit on Rashi and sometimes disagrees with Rashi. It's an advantage and a slight hardship because it's much lengthier. I'll try to summarize what I can as we learn. So our Mishnah tells us, we'll read the Mishnah, explain, and then we'll read the Mishnah again and try to get more depth. Erev Pesachim, the eve of Pesachim, samuch la mincha, adjacent to mincha, lo yochal adam ad shetechshach. A person shouldn't eat till it darkens. Afilu anisha b'Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyasev. Even a poor man among Israel should not eat on the night of Pesach until he's leaning. Ve'lo yifchetu lo me'arba kosot shel yayin. And they shouldn't give him any less than 4 cups of wine. Ve'afilu min ha'tamchui. And even from that special basket called the tamchui basket, which used to be passed around with food that was ready-made, that was for someone who was so poor that he didn't have food to eat that day. The tamchui was a basket where you'd put in your donation of ready-made food, and the ani would take out the ready-made food. There were different types of charities that were given. The tamchui was, by definition, it was the name of a type of basket, and the idea was you put in food that's edible, and the only one who could take from it is someone who really needs the food right now. If a person has food for today, but he can't pay his mortgage tomorrow, that's a different charity that he gets from. Okay, so now we read the Mishnah, and we gave a cursory understanding of the Mishnah. Now, let's read the Mishnah again and notice a few things that should bother us. Erev Pesachim. What's bothering you? Why Pesachim plural? Right. Why are we talking about Pesachim plural? Okay. Tosfos is bothered with that. I'll leave that for homework. Samuch la mincha. Whenever we have the word samuch in Shas, samuch is code word for a half hour. Samuch, unless defined otherwise, whenever you have the word samuch, it means when it's adjacent in time, it means a half hour earlier. That's the definition of the word samuch. Which leads us to another discussion which we won't have tonight, which is when we talk about time, we have to remember that the concept of minutes is a concept that came around more or less at the time that they developed watches. When people were dealing with sundials, people didn't talk about minutes. You know, there's a Tosefta in the beginning of Brachos. In the very beginning of Brachos, the Tosefta discusses how do you break down time. And there's an interesting discussion in the Chazanish, Rav Yonatan Eibshitz, when the Torah talks to us, what's the minimum amount of accuracy that the Torah deals with? Meaning when we talk about a din d'oraisa, when we talk about a biblical din, does the Torah go down to the hour? The half hour? The minute? The second? Is it really like that midoraisa? When the Torah says you have to daven kriyishma in the morning, and Chazal tell us, well, the morning means the first 3 hours of the day. Can you really look at your watch and say there's a split second like this and a split second like that? How far, when the Torah talks, to what accuracy does the Torah talk? When the rabbis talk, to what accuracy do they talk? Now, we know there are areas that a split second makes a difference. We know there's a split second that Shabbos begins at, right? There is that split second. Baking matzah, it's a good question. You know, it would seem there is a split second difference. So do we apply that to everything? Where do we apply that? Those are, baking matzah is more a natural phenomenon. When does it become chametz? It's not a time factor. We gauge it by time. But really it's a question, what's happening here scientifically? Is that chametz or not? So that's slightly different. Shabbos entering is a time factor. Okay, so that's just the point. Once we mention time, we should know there is this discussion in time. Hey, what are we talking about? And then we come to the word mincha. So, Zev, you want to help us out? What are the two options when we say mincha? What do we mean? So we have mincha gdola and mincha ktana. Mincha really refers to the afternoon offering or the afternoon prayer that corresponds to the afternoon offering. Technically, midoraisa, biblically, the afternoon offering can be brought from midday onward, from 12 onward, midrabanan 12:30 onward, but from midday onward. And being that the Torah says that lechatchila, we have a mitzvah to complete all the sacrifices of the day before the Korban Mincha, that the last sacrifice of the day is the Korban Mincha. So they didn't want to stop the work in the Beis HaMikdash at 1 o'clock, right? If you bring the Korban Mincha at 1 o'clock, at the earliest hour you could, that's very nice. You did the mitzvah as early as possible, but that's it. Close up shop. The Beis HaMikdash has to close up. So they wouldn't bring the Mincha offering right away in the beginning, but rather they would wait till the later afternoon. And there, they would wait to the period that's called Mincha Ktana. Mincha Ktana is the last 2.5 hours of the day. And Mincha Ktana is the time, the last 2.5 hours of the day, when they would traditionally bring the afternoon Korban Tamid, the Tamid of the afternoon, and they would bring it, let's say we take the last 2.5 hours of the day, we divide it in half. We say there's an hour and a quarter before sunset, and then an hour and a quarter before that. Mincha Ktana can be divided into two halves, right? So they would always bring the Korban Mincha, the Tamid of the afternoon, by the end of the first half, meaning by Plaga Mincha. They would never wait till the last minute to bring the Korban Mincha. That they didn't do in the Beis HaMikdash. The Gemara even says that we daven Shacharis till 4 hours into the day, right? Why? Because the Tamid of the morning could be brought into 4 hours of the day. So the Medrash says, whoever waited till 4 hours into the day to bring the Tamid? They bring the Tamid right away in the morning. So why? Where do we get this halacha from? So the Medrash tells us an interesting story. The first morning that they were supposed to start doing service in the Beit HaMikdash, they had all this massive celebration. They had 14 days of celebration running from Rosh Hashanah till Sukkot. They didn't even fast that year on Yom Kippur. They were so busy celebrating. And the first day of celebration, everyone's gathered at the crack of dawn to bring the Korban. And Shlomo's wife, the daughter of Paro, she decided that she enjoys being in bed with Shlomo. She doesn't want him to go out early to bring the Korbanos. So what'd she do? She had her servants form a canopy, like a dome, over her bedroom. She had this massive bedroom in her palace, and Shlomo HaMelech was accustomed to having a skylight there, and she had them develop, when he wasn't prepared for it, a massive dome that was above whatever tapestry or whatever they had there, and she had it made of copper in a way that it would seem like there were little shining stars inside. So Shlomo's lying in bed next to her, comes early in the morning, he looks up, he sees stars, he sees darkness, he thinks it's the middle of the night. An hour later, he sees stars, he sees darkness. Who's going to come and wake him? No one's going to come, he's the king. All of Am Yisrael is gathered at the gates, waiting for the inauguration, for the first sacrifice to be brought. 1 hour, 2 hours, the sun has risen, it's already past Man Kriya Shema, it's already 4 hours into the day, and suddenly Shlomo's had enough, he rushes out of bed, and he sees his wife tricked him, and he runs out there, you know, he's running out with the keys, he kept the keys to the Beis HaMikdash, and Yerav Ben Nevat gives him a Musa Shmuz. He starts wagging his finger at him and says, "You, all of Am Yisrael's been standing out here in the heat 4 hours waiting for you. What's wrong with you?" The Gemara says, from that day, we get the halacha that shacharis could be davened 4 hours into the day. That was the only time that they brought the Korban Tamid so late. Because Shlomo's wife, the daughter of Paro, was able to trick Shlomo.
So we owe her a debt of gratitude.
Right? Anytime you wake up late, just think back to her. Right.
Was he punished for that, though?
Even though it wasn't his fault? Well, I don't know if he was punished. The Navi seems to back Shlomo on it because the Navi says, "You, Yeravim ben Nevat, you wagged your finger and yelled at Shlomo publicly for something that was, he was tricked, you know. And then when you became king, what did you do? You had everyone do idol worship on purpose, no excuses." The Navi says, "Kidaber Ephraim Retet." We learned it in Treyasa. when Ephraim, when Yeravim ben Nevat, spoke in such anger that he was shaking out of anger. And it was real. Yeravim ben Nevat was a huge tzaddik, maybe bigger than David HaMelech before he sinned. Nasahu beYisrael, but when he became a big shot, when he became the leader of Am Yisrael, vayesham babal vayamod, he went on purpose after Avodah Zarah, and that was his end. And that sometimes, you know, we can be over righteous about someone else, but when we're put to the test. So at any rate, back to our Mishnah, the Mishnah says erev psachim samuch la mincha, and samuch la mincha we said is a half hour close to mincha. Which mincha? So we said the Korban Mincha was ordinarily brought, they didn't wait till the end of the day. We said, how'd you get to the 4 hours into the day for the Shacharis? Because at one time that Shlomo was tricked, ordinarily the Korban Tamid of the morning was brought in the morning, you know, at the crack of dawn. So how'd we get 4 hours into the day? That's because of that story. Now what about the Mincha? So the Mincha, we waited. We didn't do that as early as possible because you had to end, close up shop in the Beis HaMikdash the second you brought that. But we didn't wait till the end of the day. We waited until Plaga Mincha. Anywhere between Mincha Ktana and Plaga Mincha, we'd bring the Korban Mincha of the afternoon. So there's a lot to be said about that, but I don't know if you guys want me to go into that, the halachic implications of Plaga Mincha and Mincha Ktana. Yes, no, maybe so. We're going off on a big tangent here, but it's a point worth expanding on a little bit.
We're learning in depth.
Yeah, this isn't depth on the spot, though. This is just a tangent. Okay, so this concept of Plaga Mincha is bigger than just the question of Mincha, because we find in many halachot that Plaga Mincha is a potential switch point for the day ending. Meaning, if you want to accept Shabbos early and light candles early, how early can you do it? Plaga Mincha. A woman is supposed to do checks twice a day during her 7 days of purity, during the 7 days she's clean. Lechatchila, if she wants to make the second check of the day earlier than near sunset, so we say, okay, but don't do it earlier than Plaga Mincha. Lechatchila, we say, stick to up to Plaga Mincha. If you want to light your Hanukkah candles early in the day, how early could you do it? Up to Plaga Mincha. If you want to say Kriya Shema of the nighttime, early in the day, so it's a machlokes, but no one says you could say it before Plaga Mincha. The earliest point, according to Rabbi Yehuda, is Plaga Mincha. So we find in many areas of halacha, the halachos of Kriya Shema, the halachos of Shabbos, the halachos of Hanukkah, we find in many areas of halacha that this Plaga Mincha suddenly takes a stance, not only in the Beis HaMikdash as to when you'd bring the korban, but also as to a question of when does the potential of the next day begin? How far could you add? If you want to add, you know, you want to accept Shabbos early. You can't wake up Friday morning and say, let's make Kiddush, you know, Tosefes Shabbos. What's the earliest? So Tosfa says, the earliest is Plaga Mincha, and that's what it says in Shulchan Aruch. That's the earliest you could light candles for Shabbos too. Okay, so this Plaga Mincha has relevance not only in the area of davening Mincha and bringing the korban of the Talmud of the afternoon in the Beis HaMikdash. So the Mishnah says, Erev Pesachim, on the eve of Pesach, Samuch LaMincha, and we said the word Samuch means half hour, right? LaMincha, and now we know there are two Minchas. In the Lashon of the Mishnah, Mincha could mean Mincha Gdola, the early, the beginning of the afternoon hours, or Mincha Ktana, which is 2.5 hours before nighttime. So at that time, samuch la mincha, a half hour before this time, samuch, mincha is, let's say, we'll say we're talking about mincha ktana. So let's say we're talking about 2.5 hours before nighttime, samuch la mincha, a half hour before that, 3 hours before nighttime, lo yochal adam, a person shouldn't eat. We want a person to enter the seder hungry. Because when you do a mitzvah, you could do a mitzvah like, okay, fine, I got to do a mitzvah. Or you could walk into doing a mitzvah with excitement. So we want you to walk into eating the matzah hungry. You should be excited when you get it. So Chazal said, don't eat. Ad shetechshach. Yeah, from samach lemincha. From then until the nighttime, a person should eat. Ad shetechshach, till it gets dark. Which needs definition. What does it mean? Shetech shach. It doesn't say ad alayla. It doesn't say ad seis. It doesn't say ad shkia. It says ad shetech shach, which is its own time. Whatever time that is, till it gets dark. I think that when you do a mitzvah and you You're excited over it.
Because you're only hungry. If you're doing a mitzvah because you want to do the mitzvah, and you have more room
to feel naturally happy to do the mitzvah.
No, but you're doing it because you're hungry. It's more selfish.
What's the mitzvah? Micha, let's work backwards. What is the mitzvah on this night with matzah? What's it called? Ah, which word did you use?
Eating.
Oh. So let's think. The mitzvah is achila. The mitzvah isn't I will have ingested into my system the volume of a kazayis matzah into my stomach. If that were the mitzvah, then maybe you'd be right. But if the mitzvah by definition is eating, yeah? Well, eating is defined when you eat, by definition, if you're hungry, then that's more called eating, to the point where we say, if you're full, let's say you're full, you ate all the steaks in the world, now they bring you the afikoman. You had a wonderful meal. Now comes time for the afikoman. Halacha says, if you're so full that you really don't want to eat anymore, that's not called eating. Eating, by definition, is eating when you want to eat. Even in Hilchos Yom Kippur it says, let's say a guy ate till he was stuffed to the gills. And then comes Yom Kippur, he's stuffed, you know, the way we all are when Yom Kippur enters. It's like, how could I get the shul like this? So it says, let's say it's Yom Kippur, and he forgets it's Yom Kippur, and he's so stuffed, he's like most of us are, and then he grabs a cracker and eats it. So there can be instances where he's not chayiv, because he didn't eat on Yom Kippur. That's not called eating. You're about to vomit. You have nothing from that eating, right? So I'm not telling you you're allowed to do it. It's usur. But it might not be the isur of eating on Yom Kippur. Meaning eating by definition is that I want it. I'm hungry for it. And the hungrier I am, so then it's not that it's more called eating. Look at Rashi. What does Rashi tell us? Mishum hidur mitzvah. What does the word hidur mitzvah mean? Oh, what a nice thing he said. Excuse the pun. He said, beautify the mitzvah. You guys agree with him? You're all Israelis, so you could agree with him. But the truth is that it's a machlokas, rishonim. Because the question is, does the word hidur mitzvah come from the Hebrew word of hadar, the hadarta p'nei zaken, or periyetz hadar, which means to beautify? Or does the word hidur mitzvah come from the Aramaic word of lehader, which means to chase after? And then hidur mitzvah would be to chase after the mitzvah. It's a machlokas. Rashi in Shabbos says that when the Gemara discusses on Hanukkah, mehadrin, so what does Rashi say right away? Does anyone remember? Rashi says, mehadrin achar hamitzvot. Now, if mehadrin means to beautify, you can't say to beautify after the mitzvah. That doesn't work grammatically, right? So Rashi over there at least is learning that mehadrin means to chase after the mitzvah. It doesn't mean to beautify the mitzvah. Mehadrin, Rashi is learning, hidur comes from the Aramaic lehader. Now, does that mean that Rashi has no such concept of hidur mitzvah in Hebrew? I don't know. I'm just saying one source I have where Rashi indicates to me that mehadrin is Aramaic. It's not the way we would say hidur is to beautify. Okay, so Rashi says that this idea of having an appetite for the matzah is hidur mitzvah. Okay, so that gives us a little bit of a picture, but the truth is that deserves its own series. What is the concept of a hidur mitzvah? Because there are many different concepts when it comes to a mitzvah. What's the best way to do mitzvah? One concept is called hidur mitzvah.
So we still don't know which hidur
it is. Rashi says it's a hidur. Well, what Rashi over here holds? No, I don't know what Rashi here holds.
You would
right.
Go after to eat if you weren't hungry. The hidur mitzvah of eating the matzah, right? You wouldn't go after food if you're hungry.
It's hidur mitzvah, it's to chase after the mitzvah,
yeah,
maybe.
I would say chasing after works better in this context. That you're not eating beforehand because you're chasing after the mitzvah.
Oh, you see?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I hear. I don't know. I hear what you guys are saying. Yefe? Okay, so our Mishnah says, on the eve of Psachim, and we said Tosus discusses why is it the plural, Samuch lamincha, which we said is a half hour adjacent to mincha, Lo yochal adam, and you'll notice that the form of the Mishnah is a form of lechatchila. The Mishnah tells us, don't do this. The Mishnah doesn't say, if you did this, X, Y, or Z. It's not b'dieved. The Mishnah is telling you lechatchila. Lo yochal adam, a person shouldn't eat, ad shetech shach, until it becomes dark, which we pointed out is a difficult term. Afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyasev. Even a poor man in Israel shouldn't eat till he leans. And the question is, what's the connection here? Is this connected? Are the two halachas here connected? What?
Where did this come from?
Right, where did this come from? And especially if you have the girsa of Tosfos, the afilu ani shebi Yisrael, and even the poor man in Israel, so then the Mishnah certainly seems to be indicating it's connected. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also
a poor man had less meals. Yes, and therefore what?
The Mishnah will be bigger for
Oh, brilliant. Avshalom, what you said is Tosfos. So let's read Tosfos. Tosfos says, "V'afilu ani shebi Yisrael lo yochal ad sheyasev." Even the poor man in Israel shouldn't eat till he leans. De'sal kadaitech, because you might have thought, de'asebat ani lo chashiva esebah, that when a poor man leans, that's not called leaning. De'en lo alma le'asev. He's got nothing to lean on. The ends of derech hirut. So that's not called a free man if he's leaning into the air, he's got nothing to lean on. That's one understanding in Tosfos. Ve'yesh nefarshim. But some explain, the way you've been explaining, ve'yesh mefarshim, de adil'el kai, that this word, these words, v'afilu ani shebi Yisrael, even a poor man in Israel, it's not connected to the next sentence. It's going back on what we just said. Ad shetechshach, we said, don't eat until it's dark. V'afilu ani shebi Yisrael, even a poor man in Israel, you're hungry, like Avshalom pointed out. You want to eat. The guy, he hasn't had lunch. He hasn't had breakfast. Chazal tell him, okay, buddy, we're going to take care of you. We're going to tell everyone to give you to eat, but we want you to wait. Perush, afilu ani shelo achal kama yamim, even a poor man who hasn't had a decent meal in days. Lo yochal ad shetechshach, shouldn't eat till it's dark. And then the Mishnah adds, once we talk about the poor man, also, no. So then we'd have to put the period after afilu ani shebi Yisrael. And even a poor man in Israel, period. Don't eat till it's dark. Next halacha, lo yochal ad sheyasev, don't eat till you lean. Lo yifchetu lo, would go back on the poor man. And don't give him less than 4 cups.
Seems that dark in.
So you're raising a very interesting point. The question is, what was their Haggadah like? So now, let's take a journey back to Chazal's time. What was davening like in Chazal's time?
By heart.
So it's not only it's by heart. You'd walk into shul by Baruch Hu. Baruch Hu was the beginning of davening. So you could imagine, if you showed up 5 minutes late, there at Shmona Esrei. You know, there's no showing up late in there at Baruch Shomar, Psukei Dezimra. Davening started with Baruch Hu, Baruch Atah Hashem, you know, straight into Shema. And that's why they had to make this special institution of Porsin al Shema, that the latecomers had a special latecomers Shema. They'd say Shema after we finish everything, we say Shema for everyone else. I'm talking about Shachris. Shachris began with that. That was Shachris. At home in bed, you got out of bed, you said Brochos, you came to Shul, there was no Psukei Dezimra, no Hallelukas, nothing. You walk in, Baruch Hu, straight. You show up 10 minutes late, you missed it. What can you do? Tefillah was, let's say, 10 minutes, 15 minutes. Tefillah was very short. So life was a little different in the days of Chazal. All of davening, all of organized religion, the way we know it, begins a little bit at the time of Ezra. But really, we have to picture that in their days, things were very different. Now let's come to our Haggadah. We're discussing waiting till nighttime. But what was their Haggadah like? Like you just pointed out, what is the poor man waiting for dark? Waiting for dark is Kiddush. We're going to see that a lot of that God existed, but you know, a lot of things didn't. You know, the Musaf we say on Rosh Hashanah was a composition in the time of the Gemara. Rav composed it. Our Rosh Hashanah Musaf, the way we say it, is a composition of Rav. So some of the concepts the Gemara seems to say are Doraisa. They had some way of doing it before Rav came along. But the way we know it today, so to us, everything's like, yeah, that's the way it is. No, a lot of things develop. So when our Mishnah says you wait till dark, what are we telling the poor man to wait till dark? That's the point you just raised. We're going to see the Yerushalmi spells it out, that in the times of the Gemara, just like they did davening very fast, they also had the Seder very fast. For the poor people, they would have an organized Seder in Shul. You'd finish Shul, and you'd sit in Shul and say the whole Haggadah in 10 minutes, 15 minutes, go home, have your Seder. A little bit different than our concept of what the Seder is.
Well, then they'd be all night talking about...
I guess, over the meal.
Right.
What about the tune for Dayanu?
It's a good question, right? So when we read the Mishnah, the question of keeping the Ani waiting till it's dark, the question is, what am I telling him to wait for? Am I telling him to wait for Kiddush? Because we know that if you're worried about an appetite, the way our Seder looks like, you could walk in after a full meal. You know, you could eat a full meal before Mincha. Samcha Mincha, what do we tell the guy to wait? 3 hours before nighttime. The way our lives work, you can have a three-course meal. You go down Mincha, you go down Maariv, you finish Halal and Shul, you go home, you do your Haggadah, when do you get to the meal? 11:30 at night? You have no problem eating the matzah with an appetite, right? That's not a problem. But we have to remember that in their days, things looked a little different. And this is where we'll pick up, is on Jim next time in 3 weeks.